Our first story today is about jazz and painting. In the middle of the 20th century, both of those arts were undergoing profound experimentation and change. The abstract expressionist Jackson Pollock, and I'm sure he didn't want to be called an abstract expressionist either, opened up American art as a serious world-class form of expression. Correspondent Judith Kampfner looks to jazz for insight into Pollock's work.
Jackson Pollock painted his signature drip-style paintings in the late 1940s. He received critical acclaim, although, as far as the American public was concerned, he was a charlatan. The paintings were shocking for his time, and even today, they're totally individual. They're large, bold works, crowded with color, crisscrossing the canvas. For many, me included, they're difficult to appreciate fully. When I discovered that Pollock liked jazz, I was relieved. And Helen Harrison, who's the director of the Pollock House and Study Center, agrees that jazz is a good way into Pollock because it's the art form his work most resembles.
In Pollock's work, there really wasn't any preliminary structure or framework. It's starting basically with a blank canvas and building the structure as you go along. Pollock was a lifelong jazz fan, and I think that jazz music influenced him very strongly, not in the sense that he was trying to duplicate or in any way respond directly to musical themes, but he believed that musical improvisation and the jazz idiom itself was the most creative thing outside of painting that was happening in the United States.
Pollock's physical approach to his work was similar to a jazz musician's. He'd lay his canvas out on the floor and work around it with quick and slow gestures, flicking household paint off a stick. Andrew Kagan is an author who's studied the links between abstract art and jazz. He says he's indebted to a documentary filmmaker.
When you look at the Hans Namuth images of Pollock at work, you do get a sense of physical dynamism and an almost dance-like kind of action that you frequently see in the performance of many jazz artists, you know, when they're improvising and things are really going well. You know, they are blowing, as they used to say, and their body is expressing what's going on in their art.
He certainly felt a strong affinity with jazz, although he was not a musician himself. In fact, there are some very funny stories about his trying to play instruments and getting so frustrated that he just smashed them.
In his house on Long Island, Pollock had a large collection of jazz records. Helen Harrison has a quote from Pollock's wife, Lee Krasner.
She said he would get into grooves of listening to his jazz records, not just for days, but day and night for 3 days running until you would climb the roof.
Recently, 17 tunes from the record collection in the Pollock House were selected for a CD called Pollock's Jazz, put out by the Museum of Modern Art. Pepe Carmel, professor of art at New York University, chose them.
Pollock had an extremely stressful life. He had severe psychological problems that he'd inherited from his childhood. He had a contentious relationship with his wife and his family. He, during much of his life, had severe drinking problems. And I think that music probably offered a way to relax, to find a source of pleasure that was not self-destructive, unlike a lot of other things he did.
There are a couple of myths, he says, which have to get debunked. First, Pollock did not listen to music while he painted. There was no electricity in the barn behind the house, which was his studio. And second, he did not listen to the kind of jazz you might expect.
Everyone who studies Pollock is a little disappointed that his taste was so retrograde. Maybe he just wanted something that would give him more immediate pleasure. He didn't want to have to work so hard at listening to music as he worked when he was making his pictures or looking at modern art.
Yeah.
It is a little bit surprising in that it's very traditional jazz, Dixieland, ragtime, vocals like Billie Holiday. In fact, his taste was somewhat conservative.
Never had nothing, no one to care. That's why I seem to have more than my share.
It's ironic that though Pollock's art was radical and unstructured, he didn't like the jazz it mirrored. He didn't like modern jazz. He didn't like his contemporary Charlie Parker or bebop.
He just wasn't sympathetic to it. He listened for a moment and said, "Turn off that junk. I only like Dixieland." In modern jazz, you tend to lose the original melody. It dissolves into a set of harmonic relationships, a set of rhythmic changes, and that the interest in what you might usually think of as secondary qualities or purely structural qualities is something that unites jazz and modern art.
The music which is closest to a Pollock is, in fact, that of saxophonist and composer Ornette Coleman. Known for his high energy and lack of melody and harmony, Coleman's 1961 album, Free Jazz, had a Pollock painting on the cover. I take two young jazz musicians to see a Pollock painting and to hear their musical responses. Alexis Quadrado on alto sax and Chris Bauman on bass are eager to jump right in. We're at an exhibition at the Whitney Museum of Art. It's called Pollock to Today. And it opens with a colourful, representative drip-style canvas, which Pollock painted in 1950. And it's called simply Number 27.
After looking at it, you kind of understand why things are where they are, or even why they look good, or maybe not even that, but you know it's organized.
To me, it's like there's thousands of paints inside the paint. Well, we were playing some things based on the
just
lines,
the overall
on the figures.
Appearance.
The musicians say that Ornette Coleman's Free Jazz immediately comes to mind when they see this painting.
Ornette Coleman, you know, most people thought it was just noise and trash and all that, but I mean, you listen to it for a while and you start to hear, you know, what's really going on, and you start to understand why it works.
You start to take in the Pollock the more you gaze at it. But I can't focus on the whole the way Pollock would have liked. I need to break it up and see figures in it. So the musicians and I improvise a little, each of us cutting a path into the grand canvas of Number 27.
I just took it wherever I was looking, wherever my eye took me, that's what I played.
It starts skipping lightly and then it gets bolder, and the grey and the black thick lines cover over a lot of the sprinkles of celadon. You know, that kitchen colour which isn't quite avocado and quite leaf green. And then there's a wonderful 50s peachy pink, which is a dominant underlay, which kind of like explodes in a zigzag. Then we get to a grey, spidery thin web made of radiator paint. And there's a burst of black streamers and a mirage of a green, shady bower in midsummer. There's black rain at the top, and in the center, but not dead center, a little off maybe, is a feathery white bird, maybe a swan.